This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, in the Nixon impeachment, this really started in the Senate with Sam Ervin. But then when the tapes came out, you know, then that led to the discovery of the tapes. And then when the tapes came out, but that was just a regular investigation, sort of like, you know, what's being done right now by Elijah Cummings in the House. And then when the tapes came out, it was obvious that Nixon was a crook. On February 6th of 74, the House of Representatives approved a resolution giving the Judiciary Committee, which is where impeachment has to begin, the authority to investigate the president for impeachable crimes. And on July 27th, 74, the House Judiciary Committee voted 27 to 11 to recommend impeachment. And that was the point in time, more or less, at which Barry Goldwater and the actual leader of the Senate and the leader of the House, the three Republicans, went over and sat down with Richard Nixon and said, it's over. Or at least the Republican leaders in the House and Senate said, it's over. This thing is not going anywhere else. So anyhow, just to kind of clean that up. Kevin Camp is on the line with us. We've been talking about impeachment, a whole bunch of things. We will get back to that in just a moment. But there are other things happening around the world, and one of them is the price tag is now coming in on Fukushima. Kevin Camps is the radioactive waste specialist at beyondnuclear.org. You can also tweet him at beyondnuclear. And Kevin, welcome back to the program. It's been a while.
Hey, Tom. Good to be here. Thanks.
Great to have you. So give us a status update, first of all, on Fukushima. Is it still pouring radioactive waste into the ocean?
Yeah, it is. They still have uncontrollable groundwater flow that's radioactively contaminated. It's because the engineered ice wall has failed utterly to freeze the ground, and so that's a failure. They are still capturing the cooling water they use daily, hundreds of tons per day, on those three melted down reactors to try to keep the melted cores cool so they don't begin to melt again. That's what they capture into these storage tanks. And incredibly, they have now surpassed the 1 million ton mark on highly radioactive wastewater that's in those storage tanks.
What are they going to do with it?
Well, they do filter it. They get out 60 plus radioactive isotopes, but there's over 200. The one they can't get out at that industrial scale is tritium, radioactive hydrogen.
Right.
And shamefully, Tokyo Electric Power Company, the Japanese government, and American consultants hired by TEPCO, like two former NRC chairmen and a former DOE official, have recommended that they simply dump it in the ocean. And it's the Fukushima fishermen's cooperatives who have stopped that for all these years now.
Wow. Well, what's the concept? If they were tritium, I would assume it's impossible to filter out because it's radioactive hydrogen. Hydrogen is the smallest or second smallest atom that there is. So, you know, to have a filter that would catch it would be, basically those atoms would be smaller than the water molecules. And so you simply couldn't separate them and take them out. Do I have that right, first of all?
Well, you do. The hydrogen in the water molecules itself, the atom of hydrogen in the water molecules is radioactive, and that's why.
Well, that's where the tritium is.
Next to impossible to get it out. You could, at a laboratory scale, do it.
Right.
It's very energy intensive.
So, what are the consequences of ingesting tritium contaminated water?
It causes cancer. It causes genetic damage. It causes birth defects. So it's like other radioactive isotopes, but it integrates into the human anatomy at the most intimate levels. I'm talking the DNA molecule,
right,
and every other cell and tissue in the human body.
Right, pretty much all the functions of our bodies that aren't fat-mediated or water-mediated, which is the vast majority of them. And if that water is radioactive, boom. Is it what kind of radiation does tritium release, and how long is its half-life? How long from the time that you ingest some tritium until it basically, well, half-life would be only half as much radiation. How long until it just stops being a threat to you?
The half-life is 12.3 years, so you have to multiply by 10 to get the hazardous persistence. That's 123 years. It'd be safer to go out to 20 half-lives, 246 years. It's called a low-energy beta emitter.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, if it's in such intimate contact with your DNA molecules that when it does its radioactive decay, it's actually not low energy. It's actually a very strong emitter at that microscopic level. That's where it does its damage, initiating cancers, causing genetic damage, causing birth defects.
Right, and clearly this isn't just humans. This would be any life form, right? Plant or animal.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so, the macaques of Fukushima Prefecture, the monkeys, have shown serious health damage. They've been living in this contamination now for 8 years. So bone marrow dysfunction and decreased brain size in scientific studies.
Wow.
And macaques are very similar to humans, biologically speaking, even genetically.
Yeah, we're only, I think, 15 or 20 million years away from them, evolutionarily. If we're 3 million years away from chimpanzees, that split probably wasn't that far back. So what is Japan going to, I mean, they're continuing to produce this radioactive water. Do they have any kind of a game plan at all?
No, and I harken back to Dr. Arjun Makajani of Institute for Energy and Environmental Research, who in the first days and weeks and months of this catastrophe 8 years ago pointed out that this highly radioactive wastewater should be taken somewhere else, like in a supertanker, where it can be more easily and safely dealt with. The problem with the million tons of radioactive, highly radioactive wastewater is it's at the Fukushima site, which is a nuclear disaster site. It's obviously an earthquake zone. It's obviously vulnerable to tsunamis. So it's a very dicey situation they're playing with. It's really the other shoe to drop, among others as well, like the high-level radioactive waste, the irradiated nuclear fuel, still in the storage pools at multiple units at that site. If they lose that cooling water in those pools could catch fire. It could be worse than the initial catastrophe that we're still experiencing right now.
Wow. And how many reactors in the United States are the same design as the one at Fukushima?
Well, 23 are identical, and another 8 are similar. But the good news is that Vermont Yankee shutting down in 2014 takes that number down to 22. And then Oyster Creek, New Jersey, another Fukushima Daiichi twin shutting down last September, takes that number down one more. So we're slowly retiring these very dangerous General Electric boiling water reactors. And the next one is going to be Pilgrim near Boston, which is due to shut down by mid-2019.
How would you respond to those people among the climate scientists who are very outspoken in saying that one of the solutions to decarbonizing our atmosphere or stopping the ongoing carbon destruction pollution of our atmosphere is nuclear power?
It's not necessary to go there. Renewables could get the job done, as could efficiency. And if you do go there, for one thing, it ain't going to work because nuclear is so astronomically expensive and takes so very long that the climate crisis will have come and gone, and you still won't have nuclear showing up at the starting gate. But in addition to all that, it's got its own insurmountable risks that are a mile long. You're trading one eco-catastrophe, the climate catastrophe, for another one, radioactive catastrophes like Fukushima, like Three Mile Island, that's about to mark its 40th year this month, like Chernobyl, and we just don't need to go there.
Is Three Mile Island still at risk? Did they ever clean that all up?
No, they've largely not even touched Three Mile Island Unit 2 that had the meltdown. Three Mile Island Unit 1 is still operating, so we know what it's capable of. And in fact, the real fight right now is not commemorating this terrible disaster 40 years ago. The real fight is preventing the state of Pennsylvania and the Trump administration from bailing out Unit 1 at Three Mile Island to keep it operating deeper and deeper into uncharted risk territory, because it's so many decades old at this point, and they want to bail it out incredibly.
Wow. So, I mean, the principal subsidy of nuclear power in the United States is the Price-Anderson Act, which says that because there literally is no insurance company in the world that will insure a nuclear reactor because they're so dangerous that the what do you call them, the the people who, the actuaries, I guess they're called, they look at the risk and they say, no, there's, you know, for no price will we write an insurance policy for a nuclear power plant. So the U.S. government, you and me and all the other taxpayers, we're the insurers of all the nuclear power plants in the United States. That's, you know, a huge, massive subsidy, even though there's no dollars involved until there's an accident. What other subsidies are we giving to nuclear power in the United States that might be appropriately directed elsewhere, like to, say, solar or wind?
Oh, the list is very long, but the crisis du jour now, if the Trump administration, Energy Secretary Rick Perry, get their way at the behest of the nuclear power lobbyists, we're talking $17 billion per year in old reactor bailout subsidies. We're talking another $17 billion per year in old coal plant bailout subsidies. That's $34 billion per year. And all it is really to keep the executive salaries at the level that they're at, to keep the shareholder returns at the level that they're at, and maybe to pay for some routine maintenance and operation costs. But the big fixes, they're not even thinking about doing those.
That's mind-boggling. Kevin Camps with BeyondNuclear.org, the website. He's the radioactive waste specialist at Beyond Nuclear. The Twitter handle is Beyond Nuclear. Kevin, thanks a lot for dropping by today.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. It's 17 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So do you think it's time for the House to call for impeachment hearings like they eventually did with Nixon via the Judiciary Committee, or do we need to continue investigating?
Whoa!
Welcome back. Things flying around the studio. Let's see here. Ray in Seattle listening on KBCS. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind today?
Well, good morning, Tom.
Hey.
I wanted to respectfully disagree with Nancy Pelosi. You know, and I do believe that if Donald Trump does not get convicted, he will, it will embolden him, and he will be more of the braggadocious sort. But I think to the contrary, we're ignoring the fact that by shining a light on his and uncovering his misgivings and wrongdoing and actual crimes, that we would embolden and strengthen the resolve of the Democrats and independents, and possibly even get the attention of some on the right who believe in the rule of law.
But there's a couple of steps here. The first step is you do the investigation. I mean, you know, with Watergate, there was a lot of stuff going on in the press also. But basically, you do an investigation which is not under the rubric of impeachment. It's simply, you know, we're doing an investigation. We saw this with Elijah Cummings last week, the week before, you know, in his testimony with Michael Cohen. And there's others that are happening, many of them behind closed doors. But, you know, there's going to be some more open testimony. And then at some point, when some particular threshold has been passed, that's the point at which the House of Representatives holds a vote on whether to authorize the Judiciary Committee to begin investigating whether impeachable offenses, in other words, to begin an impeachment investigation. And that didn't happen until February of 1974 in the case of Richard Nixon. And it took him about 5 or 6 months to get to the point where, you know, it was obvious that he was going to be impeached and convicted. And he stepped down. So, you know, do you think that we're already, is your argument, Ray, that we're already at or beyond the point where Congress should empower the Judiciary Committee to investigate impeachable offenses? Or should the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee and the Oversight Committee and any other committee that wants to get in on the act, those are the three that I know are investigating Trump right now, should they simply continue with their investigations until the mass of evidence becomes so overwhelming? I mean, a lot of what we're finding now is that Trump was a criminal before he became president. But, you know, while he was president, okay, he, you know, he paid off a porn star to become president. Well, I think that's a pretty big crime, actually. But anyhow, what do you think, Ray? Which are you suggesting?
I agree that I do believe that that's a pretty important crime. I also believe that there's sufficient evidence that we should get the proceedings started. And I believe with this administration, there's a lot more that's going to be uncovered. And I think people, it will open up an awful lot of eyes. And I do believe that we do have sufficient evidence to at least get the proceedings started and get the further investigation going.
So you realize that the minute that the House votes to investigate impeachment, Fox News, the right-wing hate radio, which did not exist in 74, and, were just kind of getting their oats during the Nixon impeachment. In fact, they kind of drove it. They're going to go nuts. You ready for that?
They are going to go nuts, and that's what they do. And I think the only thing that we can do is continue to shine a light on the fact that what he's doing is wrong. And
I'm with you, Ray. Sunlight is the best disinfectant here. That should be our motto. Ray, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to us on KBCS. It's 21 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And what do we do here with all this? Kathy in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hey, Kathy, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. What's up?
Good. I have this feeling that we're never, ever going to get this man out of office, because right now, I think we all know he's guilty of treason. But the problem is the state of New York, it's going to have so many charges against him that if he steps foot out of the Oval Office, he has no protection whatsoever.
Right, and that's why you're seeing all these articles about how the Trump reelection campaign. Well, first of all, they've been raising money literally since the day after he was inaugurated, which has never happened before. And they have, they've raised over $100 million. They have been using some of that for the legal fees of his children, and himself, but. But by and large, they've got this huge war chest, and the effort, the get-out-the-vote effort, is going to be absolutely unprecedented, at least from what I'm reading.
I don't really think there's going to be an election. You wrote an article about a year or so ago about the three things that the guy that wrote his book said he was going to do. He was going to come up with an enemies list, he was going to attack the free press, which he's done, and he was going to declare martial law.
Right.
I think because of the number of hate crimes that are going up, the hate groups that have exploded, that dog whistle. He may not even do a dog whistle. He may make a call out to his little militia people. The biggest militia that frightens me is Eric Prince. And it's not Blackwater anymore, but it's something else.
Right.
And as an African-American, I'm terrified that, I think that, the Tulsa race riots in 21, something on that order is going to cause him to say, oh, my God, we have this massive civil unrest. I've got to declare martial law.
Well, there's a precedent for it. That's what George W. Bush did after Hurricane Katrina, and he brought in Blackwater, and they were walking around with guns. And there were people who were trying to flee New Orleans who got shot. I'm not sure they were shot by the Blackwater people. I think they were shot by the state police. But, same thing. It was poor black people is trying to get out of there and flee into basically a white neighborhood, and they got shot dead.
They got shot by some of these, little militia groups.
Uh-huh.
So
thank you.
This is my fear, that he's trying to find a way to consolidate his power, and not so much because he likes being president. I think at this point he has gotten himself into a corner that there's no escape from.
Yeah, like a rat. Maybe I shouldn't use that word after the way he used it against Michael Cohen. But a cornered rat is far more dangerous than a non-cornered rat.
Exactly.
And Donald Trump is cornered right now. So real quick, Kathy, we're going to hit a break in just a second. Do you think? Well, actually, I guess I got another minute here. Do you think that if Donald Trump is if they open impeachment hearings, that will speed up the process toward martial law, or that might slow it down?
I think we're going to start seeing Maxine's going after tax records. I think it may speed it up. May speed it up.
Yeah, when she goes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, he's not the only one. I think Elijah Cummings, they're looking into the Trump organization.
Yep.
There is so much graft. I don't think any of us have any concept of just how dirty everybody in his administration, including Mr. Pence. But
some of it has leaked out. I mean, look at the Panama City condo thing where we now know for a fact that Ivanka lied to potential investors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have her on tape with that.
Yeah.
But look at Wilbur Ross and the Bank of Cyprus and you know, Cambridge Analytica. This is like the tentacles of which, you know, you and I are the same age, Tom. Watergate pales. This is nothing. It makes it look like a picnic.
I agree.
So I'm concerned.
I am too, Kathy. I am very concerned. Kathy, thank you. Thank you for a thoughtful conversation. I appreciate it. It's great talking with you. And thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour. We'll break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back with more of the conversation about, what do we do with this criminal president?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And I'm generally very reluctant to call a public official who has not been convicted of a crime a criminal, but the evidence is everywhere. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Marilyn notes it was Alexander Butterfield who gave the testimony. The Fred I was thinking about, I think, was the guy who installed them. But, thank you for that, Marilyn. And, you know, spot on. Elena in Seattle. Hey, Elena. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hi. So I want to weigh in on the debate about impeachment.
Hmm?
I think it's time to hold the hearings. And I know that the political calculation is never certain, but it's the right thing to do. And I remember the movie The Post that talks about the Pentagon Papers being released through the paper.
Mm-hmm.
The head editor and the owner of the paper, they
the publisher, yeah,
really struggle with it, and it's also very scary for them. You know, bad repercussions. They may have go to prison, or even the paper may be closed. But they decided to do the right thing, and it paid off.
Yeah, I think we forget how bad it's gotten. I mean, we had a president 12 years ago or thereabouts who literally lied to us, both a president and a vice president, who lied to us about a threat to this country. They said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and intended to use them against us. Scott Ritter and others, Hans Blix, the UN inspectors, were inside Iraq. They visited all of his facilities. They said there is no threat. Saddam Hussein repeatedly said, I have no intention of coming after your country. Come, you can look around, no problem. And George Bush and Dick Cheney lied us into a war that has cost the lives of over 1 million people, destroyed a nation, destabilized the region, and cost the United States 6,000 or 8,000 American soldiers' lives and literally several $1 trillion worth of treasure. And the Democrats in Congress failed to hold Bush and Cheney responsible. I think those were impeachable crimes, among other crimes that were committed, like torture and the invasion of Americans' privacy, spying on American citizens. We didn't hold them responsible. So now we've got a guy who's about to start a war in Venezuela in order, as part of his reelection strategy, in my humble opinion, and who has given away secrets to foreign governments, multiple governments on multiple occasions, has a woman associated with Chinese intelligence running a ring out of Mar-a-Lago, an influence buying ring. Just serious stuff. The threshold has gotten so high to impeach a Republican. It's like, you know, they almost have to go out on Fifth Avenue and shoot. That's right. Michael Cohen said the Republicans would still support him, and I think they would. And Elena, I think that, you know, we're about 15 years late in this conversation here, frankly. We should have been having this conversation in 2003 when George W. Bush lied us into the war in Iraq.
Yeah, and I got really disappointed when Obama said, let's move on. Let's move on. You can't move on. It'll just get worse.
Yeah, and it did. It absolutely did. And every time we've just moved on, we moved on from Nixon, you know, and Jerry Ford pardoned Nixon and all his buddies. And then George Bush, at the recommendation of William Barr, who was then Attorney General and who is now again, by the way, William Barr, December 25th, 1992, recommended to George Herbert Walker Bush that he pardon Caspar Weinberger and Ollie North and all these guys from Iran-Contra and thus cover up the treason that was committed by Ronald Reagan in cutting the deal with Iran to hold the hostages so that he could win the election, and the treason that was committed in, or the crimes that were committed in arming the Contras down in Central America, which are still coming back to haunt us in the form of refugees right now. That was covered up, and so then that got us George W. Bush, who, along with Dick Cheney, committed all these crimes. That got covered up, or we moved on from it. Let's say Bill Clinton moved on from prosecuting Bush and Reagan, and then Barack Obama moved on from prosecuting Bush Jr., and now, you know, is the next Democratic president going to move on from prosecuting the Trump crime family?
Yeah, don't forget Elliot Abrams.
Yeah, he was. That's right. Elliot Abrams was one of the guys that got pardoned by William Barr, and who then Donald Trump just hired and sent down to Venezuela. And he's the warmonger, the war criminal behind the Contra part of the Iran Contras. It's insane. Elena, thank you for the call. Lawrence in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, Lawrence, what's up?
Hey, Don. 8 years ago, I told my wife when I heard a poll that I was. 42 or 43% of all Americans believe the Earth was created in a literal 7 days. I said to her, this does not bode well for the future of American politics, that level of willful ignorance. But because it is such a large number of people who are willfully ignorant that are backing this president, I think Nancy Pelosi's approach is the right one. I think just bringing articles of impeachment would edge us closer to a civil war. He's got 40% of the American population in his pocket. And however ill-informed they may be, they are in his pocket and solidly behind him. And I think the only thing we can do is, with the investigations, show try and get as many of those people as possible, change those hearts and minds with making the evidence so clear and so undeniable, although it's pretty obvious already, to where they can't refute it, where Fox News can't even refute it.
But, you know, they weren't bothering by the end of the Shrub presidency, Bush Jr. They were, you know, even Fox wasn't bothering to say, oh, you know, what he did was totally legal. You know, they were just saying that torture and the waterboarding and the people who died being tortured and the use of black sites around the world where people were disappeared, that was just necessary, even if it was against the law. You know, spying on Americans, Snowden revealed all that stuff. You know, all the crimes of the Bush administration. You know, it's like, oh, well, we'll cut him a check. He's a, cut him a pass because he's a Republican. It seems like that's happening all over again. And at some point, somebody's got to say, I'm sorry, enough.
My point is that impeachment is going to be counterproductive. The only thing we can do is win the White House in 2020 and try and convince as many people between now and then
But do we then move on? I mean, you know, Jimmy Carter took the White House, and he did not look back and try to prosecute Nixon. Bill Clinton took the White House. He did not look back and try to prosecute Reagan and Bush. Barack Obama took the White House. He did not look back and prosecute Bush. And in every case, there were actual crimes that could have been prosecuted, committed. You know, is the next Democratic president going to be expected to let Donald Trump ride off into the sunset like all the previous Republican criminal presidents?
I'll tell you what, as a practical matter, I think it's a matter of what the percentage of people that's still behind Trump at that point is.
Yeah.
If he's still got 35 or 40%, it's just going to rip this country apart.
So instead of paying attention to the laws and the Constitution, we should be paying attention to polls.
It's got to be realistic.
Well, I get the practicality here, Lawrence, but I'm so offended, not by you, but just by, you know, this 40-year history, basically, of excusing Republican criminality, while when a Democratic president wears a tan suit to the White House, it suddenly becomes a week-long scandal, you know. It just blows my mind, the hypocrisy of it all. Lawrence, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Karen in Winter Haven, Florida, watch this on Free Speech TV. Hey, Karen, what's on your mind?
Well, to continue on, Tom. I've always maintained that they never should have allowed Trump to even take office without divesting from his corporation or his company or whatever it is because of the Emoluments Clause. And there was nothing there, or we have nothing in our Constitution to even say, hey, you cannot take office without doing these things. Now, it sounds to me like the Emoluments Clause is expecting us to impeach anybody who violates it. But as we see, impeachment is very difficult. So we're working from behind, kind of, you know, with not saying, no, you cannot enter the office without doing this, saying, oh, if you do this, we will remove you.
Yeah.
And that's not a good solution for us, because at the time, I think Trump's lawyer said something like, oh, well, we say he doesn't have to put his assets into a blind trust or something like that. And nobody was screaming going, yes, he does.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I mean, just his lease on the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., the actual hotel, it's the old post office building, is owned by the U.S. Park Service. And they leased it to the Trump Organization. And the lease itself has language that says if any officer of this corporation acquires public office, they have to, that breaks the lease. That's the end of the lease. The property goes back to the Park Service.
Right. And they haven't even, no one has enforced that either.
Right.
I think they did ask for an opinion, but for some reason it's been kind of scuttled or something.
Well, it's because it's the Trump administration. I mean, the Park Service is now, you know, under the control of political appointees of Donald Trump, so they're not going to do that. I mean, they're not going to enforce their own contract. It's the whole thing, it's like the more you dig, the deeper you get, the more it smells. I mean, just the more grody the whole thing gets. Karen, thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 44 minutes and change past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Talk media for the sane among us.
To Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. I'll be right back with more of your calls in just a moment. And welcome back. Patrick in Los Angeles listening on the Tom Hartman app. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Tom, hey, listen, yeah, thanks for the line. Appreciate it. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, this impeachment should have been done yesterday or last year. You know, we have seen this guy admit on TV that he committed obstruction of justice. And, you know, I mean, precisely what he talked about is the very definition of obstruction of justice, interfering with an investigation because he didn't think it warranted, you know, looking into. And I mean, obviously, he had a vested interest in it not being warranted. That's one reason. The second reason is this guy's obviously a Russian. I mean, he's been committed to advancing, you know, Russian special interests, or at least, you know,
I think he's trying to advance his own special interests in the Russia deal because it involves so many corrupt oligarchs, and you know, it's just inherently a corrupt deal. I mean, this is how Milton Friedman set up the modern Russia, is going to make him hundreds of millions of dollars. It's going to be his most lucrative deal ever, and that's why he's bending over backwards because he sees, you know, all that money in his future. I don't think he cares about Russia or the United States, frankly. I think his only loyalty is to himself and his money.
Well, at this point, because he has involved himself so much with the Russians, if he separates himself now, then, you know, the evidence will come out. Things will leak out.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, if in his first meeting, his first private meeting with Putin, Putin said, hey, Donald, I just wanted to let you know that I'll take that apartment at the top of the Trump Tower that you're building, which will, you know, dramatically increase the value of the building. And we will make this thing, we will get this thing built. Don't worry about it. And Donald Trump said, oh, boy, thank you very much, Vladimir. At that point, then, from that point forward, with every single meeting that he has with Putin, you know, Putin now is in a position essentially to blackmail him if he wants. He doesn't have to say a word. Trump knows it, right? Trump is afraid that now that this is going to come out, that he's got this deal. I mean, that just makes so much sense to me. It so explains so much of his behavior, because Trump's not an ideologue. I don't even think he understands international politics. He just knows where, you know, he in the Philippines, he can pay off the guy and he gets his Trump Tower. You know, in Indonesia, he can, you know, he knows how to bribe politicians. He learned it really well from his dad and from the New York mob.
You know, until now, he's never been an ideologue. It's only when you know, his survival has depended upon these guys, and that, you know, the...
And that's not being an ideologue. That's just being a hypocrite. That's just, you know, saying, oh, yes, I'm suddenly opposed to abortion, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, because it's going to advance.
Yeah, when Marla Maples got pregnant, he had a conversation with Howard Stern on the air about whether or not she should have an abortion.
That's true. Yeah. That is, well, I mean, just more examples of you know, ridiculous hypocrisy. But you know, by itself, obstruction of justice and, you know, his commitment to Russia. I mean, those two things. And, you know they're not going to prosecute him. You know, the Democrats need to start talking about that. They're not going to prosecute him because he's taking an oath.
Because he's what?
He's taken over the Justice Department.
Oh, the Justice Department, yeah. And William Barr is a big piece of that, by the way. His role in pardoning all these Iran-Contra guys is insane. Patrick, thank you. George in Chicago, listening on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Hey, George, what's on your mind today?
Well, I love your show, Tom, not only because of what I learned from you and your guests, but the incredible array of intelligent callers. Most of what I wanted to say has already been said. I'll just leave it at this. Lord Acton's maxim applies to money as well as power, because they're fungible. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Absolute unlimited money corrupts absolutely. And that's what we're facing with a Trump campaign. As you pointed out, he started campaigning for 2020 the day after he was inaugurated, and he's already built up a huge, monstrous war chest, a lot of it filled with dark money.
Right.
And getting 20 Republican senators to vote to convict him and remove him in the face of his base and that kind of money is terrifying to them. And I think that Donald Trump is such an egotistical maniac that even if he was convicted and removed by the Senate, that would not stop him from running for office in 2020. If he was removed this year or next year during the primaries or even during the convention, if it happened that way, he's got so much money and so much access to lawyers, he'd be able to file the motions in 50 states to get on the ballot. And
but would he win? But would he win? I think if he was successfully impeached by the Senate at that point, Fox News would pull their support.
He would split the Republican Party a million ways to Sunday.
Right.
And that's what the senators, Republican senators, are terrified of.
Well, this raises, George, this raises also the question of what happens if Michael Cohen's prediction is correct, that Trump loses in 2020 but refuses to leave the White House.
I think that the longtime public servants would simply ignore him, and if necessary, the Secret Service would remove him.
But what if he refuses to leave the White House and Chris Kobach comes forward and says, yes, Donald Trump lost the election by 5 million votes and by 35 electoral votes, but here, I've got proof that in these states where these electoral votes happened, there was voter fraud. I've got the names. I've got the lists. We can prove that this election was fraudulently stolen by Democrats by illegal immigrants voting. I mean, you know, enough syncopants in enough states who literally are saying that right now. They're saying that about the last election, that even in the lack, you know, absolutely lacking evidence. That's going to be the rubric that he'll use. That'll be the excuse that he'll use to try to...
I have no doubt, Tom. I have no doubt, but I think that the patriots in who are in government service will do everything to prevent that. They'll tell him to take it to court. And here's a little known fact. The president's band, the Marines, they're the defense force for the White House. They'll defend the White House against attackers, and they'll make sure Trump leaves.
Wait a minute. The musical? Oh, he hung up. I didn't quite understand that, but anyhow, we'll see where it goes. Robin in Kingston, Washington. Hey, Robin, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm just going to chip in here on the impeachment debate, and I think I have a very good analogy. I'm actually look at impeachment in the same way that I do the effectiveness of big marches and whatever. And just to let anybody know, understand, I am pleased that we have Trump and Pence right exactly where they are, because we should make this an albatross around the Republican Party's necks for the next half century. Yeah. But anyways, the point that I want to say is that I have written a thing called Civil Information, which I've shared with you before, and I criticize the effectiveness of big marches because they go from nowhere to nowhere in front of only the marchers, and then they end up being underreported by the oligarch media, and the big marches happen rarely. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at impeachment as the same way, okay, because I feel that essentially impeachment efforts, major efforts, go nowhere, and they do not change governance. It wasn't the impeachment of Nixon that brought a wave of left or Democrats and women into Congress and whatever it might be. It was Ford's pardoning of him.
Right.
So the question that I ask my left friends to try to consider is, which is better regarding marches? 1 million-person march every now and then, or 1 million one-person marches or small acts of democracy? So it's the same question, which is better?
Well, okay. We saw this with the Iraq War. At the time that Bush and Cheney were lying us into the Iraq War, not only were there the largest mass demonstration of people in the streets in the history of the world happened, in early 2003, just before Bush invaded Iraq, saying, please don't. But also, I was living here in Portland at that time, doing my program here from Portland, and you couldn't drive down the street. I mean, not literally every street corner, but many of the more prominent street corners in this town had rotating groups of people, and it was typically just two or three people who were standing there with signs, or the women who were standing in all white, or people standing in all black. We had all these individual citizen protesters with these very eloquent protests. I'm guessing that's what you're talking about, Robin.
This is Tom. I am talking about that. So to tie it in, I would say, which is better regarding one impeachment process, or would it be better for all of the people who do want impeachment to not pass that responsibility on to impeachment, but take that same energy and get online?
Yeah, I get it. Robin, I'm sorry, we're out of time. I think both are possible. I think we can walk and chew gum, but we'll see. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It actually requires you to participate. Please, jump in. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.